Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the regular meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Our chair, Martha Robertson, is excused tonight. And I wondered if you would please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. I would request that folks silence their cell phones for this evening, unless, of course, you're an emergency responder, and point out that the exits, the stairways, are in the two corners of the chambers. If there should be a fire, please do not use the elevator. May we have the roll call of members, please?
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Ms. Robertson has asked to be excused. Mr. Robinson?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Ms. McAsey? Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
13 members present.
Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I have a proclamation tonight from our chair, which I'd like to read. Kind of exciting. It's a proclamation regarding Latina Month in Tompkins County. Whereas, since 1968, Latin Latina Month has been celebrated between September 15th and October 15th in recognition of the anniversary of the independence of five Latin American countries, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua. And whereas Mexico, Chile, and Belize also celebrate their independence during this period, and Columbus Day, Dia de la Raza, is October 12th, and whereas in recognition of the contributions made and the important presence of Latin and Latina Americans in the United States and Tompkins County, we celebrate the group's heritage and culture. And whereas Latins, Latinas, have had a proud and positive influence through their strong commitment to family, faith, hard work, and service, and whereas Latins, Latinas have enhanced and shaped our national culture with centuries-old tradition that reflect the multi-ethnic and multicultural customs of their community. Now, therefore, I'm Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim September 15, 2013, through October 15, 2013, as Latin Latina Month in Tompkins County. And hopefully we have someone from the Latino Civic Association. Is Micah Martoro here? Welcome.
And Fernando.
Thank you once again for doing this. My name is Micah Martorell. I am the president of the Latino Civic Association, and on behalf of the Latinos in this community, we thank you. I'd also like to invite each and every one of you to a lot of the events that we have going on between now and October 15th all around our community. You guys are more than welcome to come. And once again, thank you.
How do you find out about the events?
The events are located on our Facebook pages. Real quick, I can tell you some. This Saturday, September 21st, we're going to have a Latino Heritage Month daughter dance that will be held at GIEC. We'll also be having some workshops going on up at Cornell. That'll be on the 20th. We'll also be having a Latino Heritage Month gallery that's going on the entire month up until October 15th. And we'll be also showcasing something special for the Friday night gallery night, October 4th. That's going to be at Jen and Andy's gift shop located near the Commons. And you can locate us on Facebook, Latino Civic Association, or on our website, www.wix.com/LCA. All right? Thank you.
Thank you. You do so much for our community, all of you, and to celebrate this is a wonderful thing. I just want to remind people that the microphones need to be looking at you. You need to be looking approximately at the microphones when you're talking. You should have them pointing at your mouth. They should be about 9 to 12 inches away, and it's sort of a cone. If you turn your head and talk sideways, it won't pick up, and it'll make it sound like it's choppy. So be aware of your microphones, and that's the same for the public who talks to us. Please use the microphones that are available so that it will carry not only in this room, but also for the folks who are listening at home on television. We don't have any blue cards tonight. No one signed up to speak. However, we'll be glad to have people talk. If you would please come to the microphone and speak. You are our guests, and we limit your comments to 3 minutes, and we'd be glad to hear from you on any topic. Please state your name and what municipality you're from.
Teresa, the mic comes down.
A little bit closer to the mic.
Teresa Ault, City of Ithaca. Hear about living wages, as you probably realize, and since it's not up for a vote today, I'll be really short. I just want to remind you every time you are asked to vote for a tax abatement for big bucks to come out of our taxes, you are being persuaded to do this by promises of a huge multiplier effect. That is, the money, you are told, will go round and round in the community and amount to many times the original tax expenditure. And I want to submit that it is the same with paying your contractors living wages. The money will be subject to exactly the same multiplier effect. Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. Would anyone else like to speak to us? Some people just came in. We're on privilege of the floor. If anyone would like to speak, please step to the microphone. I see Pete Myers.
I'm going to sit. Bring it up. Adjust it.
Everybody, my name is Pete Myers. I live in the city of Ithaca.
Back about 6 to 8 inches away from the microphone. Then it picks you up fine.
Too close. Wow, just kind of stepping into this. So we just had a rally outside. I'm kind of, you know, this is a... We're really trying to rally the troops on this issue. You know, I think that the issue of living wage we kind of take for granted because of the kind of workers that tend not to make a living wage in our society, which is oftentimes women working in child care and women, not entirely women, but also with senior care. I think there's a lot of workers that we kind of take for granted that the county can't afford to pay a living wage. And if the county has to pay money for it, we can't raise taxes for that. The ironic thing is that I think Joe Mariana found out in his report that approximately 70-75% of the contractors are actually now paying a living wage, but in fields that we kind of take for granted pay a living wage, like information technology. It's interesting that the county actually subsidizes, the taxpayers are subsidizing that. The taxpayers are subsidizing everything. For the workers who are not making a living wage, we can't pay them because the prevailing wage for that kind of work is not subsidizable. These people deserve to live in poverty. I know that people are not actually saying that, but it has to feel that for people. I think that people doing county business that's so obviously county business, like Stanley McPherson, Milton Webb, for them to be making $9 an hour doing their work they're doing, I don't think any one of us would want to be working in the recycling facility with the kind of stuff that comes through there. And I actually, if one employer is going to get taken care of this year, it really should be Reed Community, and then we can keep moving forward. That's all I have to say right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Pete. Some more folks have come in. Anyone who'd like to speak on privilege of the floor, please step to one of the microphones. Can you lower that? So.
Yeah. Hi, please, I see a lot of familiar faces here.
Please state your name and your
Kathy
municipality.
Kathy Valentino.
I know who Kathy Valentino is.
Hi. Former. When have you ever seen me turn down an empty mic? Never. I just wanted to come and speak in support of a living wage for all the people in Tompkins County should have it. And I think as the leaders of this community, the legislative body, for you to step forward and do this with your contractors would not only be great for the people that work directly for the county, but it would be a great signal to all the employers in this community. And even though I did a lot of budgets as town supervisor for 12 years, and the two components to think about in a budget is not only how much something costs, but what are your revenues, what is the money, where is the money coming back? And I firmly and truly believe that the more that we can build the living wage, not only with your workers, but all the workers around, I think you have a responsibility to be leaders in this. This money will come back because families will put more food on the table, will maybe have a bit more money to get a better car, maybe a fuel-efficient car even, coats for their children. This money comes back, and it comes back in a big and strong way. So I think you need to think about the living wage as an investment for the good of our community and for the growth of our community. And I know you are very, very concerned about this, because I know almost all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Anyone else like to speak? Please state your name and your municipality.
I'm Sharon Fox. I actually just moved into town, so I don't know what municipality I'm in. But this is the thing. It's not only what you have to gain in the situation, but what you're preventing. When people are making living wage, they have the ability to have R&R time. Coming from a military background, your rest and relaxation, and that's going to be the things that prevent you from being stressed out. It's not only about families, but, I mean, everybody of all walks of life are subjugated to lower than living wage. And, you know, when people are working multiple jobs just so that they can, pay rent. And, you know, if they happen to even be a parent and, you know, a single mom like myself, working two jobs, and then just so that I can pay for child care, who's taking care of my child when I'm making lower than living wage? Do I get stressed out? Do I need services? Do I need mental health? Do I need other things? So it's not only what you're gaining, but it's also what you're preventing. And the fact that a person that has living wage and somebody that's able to work 40 hours or less and be able to sustain themselves and their families on that with, I don't know if you guys are talking about benefits too, but at least making enough to have a living wage and to sustain themselves, that you're also giving them time to be more productive on their off-duty time and to provide for the Maslow hierarchy of needs. When you have the bare necessities, you're also giving them time to self-actualize and be more productive members of society. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak? Yes, sir.
Hi, Dave Turcon from Trumansburg. I teach at Ithaca College, and I do research in Southern Africa on HIV and AIDS, and have been for a couple of decades now. And we spent those decades trying to educate people on safe sex practices, morality, condom use, and it did no good at all. And what the research is finding is that AIDS is not a clinical issue. It's a life security issue. People who live an insecure life, who do not have control over their resources, who don't know where the next meal for their children is coming from, where their school fees are coming from, where their clothing are coming from, find themselves, put themselves out of necessity into high-risk situations that lead to the contraction of AIDS. That translates in this country to research that we're just starting to understand was a very different kind of stress experienced by people who aren't earning a living wage versus people who are. A CEO has control over their stress. A person not earning a living wage does not. And it leads, and this is documented, it leads to the release in the body of cortisone, which leads to diabetes, high blood pressure, and all sorts of other ailments. These ultimately end up being costs to society. If they earn a living wage, they don't experience these kinds of stress. They also don't go into the more high-risk behaviors, alcoholism, smoking, and the like, numbing themselves, you might say. This leads to healthier lifestyles, better nutrition. The money spent is not just for new cars, not just for clothing. Better food can lead children to have better nutrition, which can have better education outcomes. There are an awful lot of different benefits that come from a living wage, but it also prevents an awful lot of costs on society. And this needs to be considered holistically, and I really hope you will consider the benefits that this can bring to Ithaca as a community. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wants to speak to the legislature? Okay, then just line up. Remember, we're limited to 3 minutes.
Hey, good afternoon. My name is Tyler Mitchell. I live here in Ithaca. So I recently moved here to Tompkins County over the summer, and I first off want to say it's a beautiful area. It's very diverse culturally, great landscapes, great. We've got people of all shapes and stories, students, workers, and I'm here because I really believe that we need to be prioritizing a living wage in Tompkins County. With a beautiful area like this, we really need to continue to make it accessible to the people that live here. We need to be able to have a lot of respect and respect the resources, respect the jobs that people are performing for us on a daily basis. This isn't just about Ithaca. This is about the county, and this is about, I mean, we're obviously in economically hard times. It's a national issue. But this is about respect for your neighbor, young and old, and helping to revitalize the economy. As someone said before, a living wage is going to help put more money into the system. People will spend more because they'll be able to afford more. And just keep in mind, there's probably a lot of workers that, because they're not getting a living wage, they can't participate in meetings like this. They can't come in here and have a voice. There's probably people that are either at home because they were at work all day taking care of their kids, or they are still working over their jobs, getting subpar wages. So let's make Tompkins County a model for the country and really push this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, please.
Hi, my name is Kathy Russell. I'm a professor of philosophy, and I really respond well to the statements that have just come before, and I'd like to call to attention one of my favorite bumper stickers, which is a living wage is a moral value. Ultimately, we're talking about our community's morals and what is ethically right for the community to do. And you as leaders, I hope, will stand up for the ethical position that a living wage is what we need to do because it's our obligation as leaders in a moral community. Thank you.
Thank you. Please state your name and your municipality.
Good evening. My name is Molly Beckhart. I'm from District 4.
And I'm Amy Frieder, and we're both from Cornell.
We're a group of college students that loves the Ithaca community. We would first like to say that we are extremely grateful for the work that all the people of Tompkins County do that enable us to receive our college education. We're here today with gratitude and humility. We're here today to pledge our support to this community in its demand for a living wage for the county's subcontracted workers, and we are here today to join our voices in that demand.
A living wage means a life of decency and respect, not just subsistence. It is a life that the people who keep this county clean and efficient and running smoothly deserve. We believe that a living wage is a moral wage, and we urge Tompkins County to set the standard for New York State, for the country, by implementing a mandatory living wage for subcontracted employees immediately. We thank you very much for hearing us today and allowing other members of our organization to come here today. Thank you.
Thank you both. Next.
Good afternoon. My name is Cynthia Brock. I serve on City Council representing the First Ward. In municipal governments, we often spend a lot of our time and our resources trying to address the symptoms of poverty. We address issues of crime. We address issues of access to healthy food, providing transportation, providing affordable child care, providing mental health services. Many of these things, I think we all can agree, oftentimes find their roots in poverty. And we can continue to chase the symptoms. But by enacting a living wage policy and by carrying that policy forward to our contractors, we have the ability to address the roots of poverty. We have the ability to address the causes of poverty, which is access to financial resources so that people can provide food for their families, clothes for their families, school supplies, child care, have a night out to spend with a loved one, have time to enjoy life together. And this is the power that you have in enacting the living wage policy and carrying that forward to your contractors. And I strongly encourage you to do so. I'd like you to think about the larger picture and the power that this decision will make on our community and support this effort. Thank you.
Let's go to the other microphone.
Yeah, my name is Nancy Warani, and I'm running for county legislator against Mike Lane, my friend Mike Lane. I'm from Dryden. I own a bed and breakfast there. I used to work for people and made whatever wage they chose to give me. I had health insurance, I had disability, I had compensation, I had unemployment. But I chose to start my own businesses. And in doing so, starting my own businesses, I literally would eat ramen noodles for 3 to 4 years and had no health insurance, had no compensation, had no disability, had no unemployment, and no pension. So when you're talking about a living wage, you must also include that the workers in this city or county are also getting benefits, which you may not be including, okay? And the reason why I bring up my businesses is I've literally worked a business part-time, ran for political office, and I play music, and I played out to make money. And I never went to drinking. I never sold my body. I never got AIDS. So, you know, people can work extra jobs. And as it was stated downstairs to somebody when I was chatting with them about this during the demonstration, that it is up to private employers to set wages. It's the market that sets wages. If you're worth something, you make more money, and you have the opportunity to go somewhere else. And he said, well, we're just talking about the municipal employees. But as it was stated here by two people, then when you get the municipal employees getting their whatever living wage somebody has agreed is the living wage, which I think actually is pretty low because you couldn't live on $12 an hour, but then they're going to go further because they want everybody and every employer. And it's up to an employer to decide what to pay, not up to the government.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak?
Can you hear me?
That'll come up.
Is that better?
You aim it at you.
If you're 10 inches, about 10 inches away, it'll be great.
Okay.
Tip it toward me.
That's a good answer. You probably don't even need this, really, to hear me.
We need it so that the folks at home and that's watching on TV can hear you.
Okay. This is on TV. I mean, I probably wouldn't have gotten up if I knew this was on TV.
Forget it.
Yeah, so I mean, my first thoughts coming in here, I don't really go into buildings like this very often, but my first thought walking in was like, this is a really impressive building, right? This is like something that was built by someone who obviously thought this was a very important place, right? Like, it was someone who probably believed in something, who probably, you know, thought that cool things would happen here at the very least, or that there would be some sort of power that rests here. There have been a lot of arguments so far. Sorry for stepping too close again. There have been a lot of arguments so far that I find pretty compelling. There's moral arguments, economic arguments, all sorts of things for a living wage. I'm not really convinced that this is a moral issue, though. I'm not really convinced this is an economic issue either. I mean, it is on one level, but I don't think it is for y'all. I think this is much more about politics, right? And politics might be an issue of morality for some people, but in the United States, I don't think it is by a long shot. I think politics is mostly about different forces coming into conflict with each other. So I'm going to try to speak in the language that might be compelling to someone who is worried about different interests. What I'm talking about isn't necessarily, I don't know how I might put this. What I'm talking about in broad terms is the crisis of legitimacy. I come to you as a young person broadly. I go to Cornell, but that's not super important. There's lots of other young people who don't actually, you know, go to college at all, who might not even be employed, who think exactly how I do. And basically, the way that I'm thinking about this is that, you know, I was raised that, you know, you have, like, this obligation, right? It's a very liberal idea, right? I need to participate. Like, protest is a form of civic engagement. I'm coming up now because I want to participate in my democracy and everything like that. I even, you know, I worked for the Obama campaign for, like, a couple months in 2008. And, like, I was really, you know, convinced that this was the right thing and that change was going to happen. And there was a moment of big disillusionment in 2008 for a lot of young folks. And frankly, like, we know that the power doesn't rest here anymore. We've known that for a couple of years now. So what you're talking about right now is not actually whether you should do the right thing or not. It's whether you have any legitimacy at all left, right? And that might seem like it's something that's, you know, far away and distant, but that's because it's growing up right now. It's like 16, 17, 18, 19 right now, right? So what that means is that when we ask for a living wage, we're really asking for dignity. It's the same thing that the workers are asking for. So when we give you something, right, we give you an issue like this and you're balancing it economically, you're balancing it morally, and however you might do that, basically, like, the way, like, from our perspective, when we're looking at it, it's sort of like, is there anything at all that we can get from this system, right, before we just desert it entirely? So I want you to keep that in mind. Thanks.
Before you sit down, sir, would you state your name and your municipality, please?
My name is Daniel, and I'm from Santa Barbara, California. But I go to Cornell, so I guess I'm from Ithaca as well.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes.
I see a hand.
Hello. My name is Lisa Duggan. I am the former program coordinator for Friendship Donations Network, and they supply food to 26 pantries, mostly in Tompkins County. Over those years, I saw a 25% and more increase in the amount of people that have to go to the pantries. The other day, I was watching Robert Reich, who was the former Secretary of Labor for the Clinton administration, talking about a living wage and how 4-to-1 economists believe that that helps boost the entire economy. 95% of all gains during this recovery have gone to the 1%. He also stated that the average CEO makes 350 times their average worker. It used to be 40 times the average worker. So I did a little math, and New York State's minimum wage of $7.25 gives you $15,080 a year. 350 times that is $5,278,000 a year. I just wanted to leave you with that thought.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Then we'll move on. Thank you all for coming and speaking to us tonight. We have an opportunity for any municipal officials who would like to speak to us and report on their communities. I know Cynthia's here. Cynthia, did you want to speak about Ithaca? Anybody else? Okay. Then we'll turn to privilege of the floor for legislators. Anyone want to speak? Carol Chalk, then Nathan.
Hi. I raised my hand first here because I misspoke outside. I misquoted somebody outside, and there were reporters there. So while people were still in the room, I wanted the chance to credit the right person. I was approached by email by Lori Konwinski. So I wanted to credit her for sending me. I don't know if the other legislators got information about Suffolk County and Nassau County and their living wage laws. If other people didn't get that here, I'll make sure to get it to Kathy Covert. So I wanted to thank Lori Konwinski for sending me Suffolk County. It's suffolkcountynewyork.gov/department/labor/living wage. And Nassau is nassaucountyny.gov/agencies/comptroller/living wage. So you can see models there for how some other counties have approached this. And the person that I cited as having written us an interesting op-ed should have been Lynn Jackier. So I thank you, Lynn, for taking the trouble to write this. I was at our Facilities and Infrastructure Committee meeting yesterday, and we were talking about a contract for happened to do with infrastructure. It happened to be a fence, and it was going to be quite a high price. It'll be on our agenda later today, over $100 to dig a fence. It's an important fence at our airport to keep our planes safe. But built into that contract is the assumption that workers in that field will be earning not only a living wage but prevailing wage, which I was told is higher in that field. So we do have many fields that come to us when they bid on the contracts. It is understood that they are going to work into that contract a living wage, more than a living wage, and others, and we accept that and we pay it. And it's a negotiation as to how what we'll pay and for what. And others where it's just the fields in society that we don't expect. We're surprised when we're asked. So Lynn's op-ed, which since I misquoted her, I will now read from a little bit of it. She says, among other things, once we agree that it is morally unacceptable for anyone to be paid poverty wages, we begin to see the world differently. It becomes more noticeable that those who are paid below the living wage actually subsidize other salaries, the cost of goods and services, and business profits with their foregone wages. What better place to apply this understanding than in our county government? If a living wage is non-negotiable, then a way to achieve it will be developed. That's what we're being asked to do. And do we as a county believe that people who work full-time should earn enough money to pay for rent, utilities, transportation, food, health care, communication, recreation, and taxes? If we do, then we need to make a commitment to achieve that goal and keep working on it until it becomes reality. I believe in all of that. I believe that we owe it to the people that we hire to try to find ways for them to earn enough so that they don't have to partake of the services that we then have to offer. And I'm committed to trying to find a way for us to at least start to do that. I understand we can't achieve it all at once, but at least we need to acknowledge that we have an issue, that look at models out there like Nassau and Suffolk and figure out ways to start working on that. I hope we've started to do that, and I hope we'll continue to do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Let's all try to hold ourselves to the 3 minutes as well. Next, I have Nathan Shinagawa.
All right. Thank you so much, Mike. Well, first, I wanted to thank everybody for having the rally outside. I'm sorry I wasn't able to attend. I know, Pete, you asked me if I could attend. We had a budget committee meeting at the same time, so I'm sorry about that. What I wanted to say is that for me, I mean, I don't think it's whether the question is really whether or not the county will have a living wage policy that applies to all of its workers, including subcontractors. I think really the question is when and how we're going to be able to do it. And, you know, I think that the Worker Center has really taken the right approach in terms of working with the county, participating in committees, and figuring out whether or not we can, or how much, I mean, we can invest in this over the next few years. And so, you know, for this budget cycle, I mean, today we're getting presented our 2014 tentative budget, and I think really this is the perfect time to ask this year, right, how much money are we going to put into this living wage policy? And I'm very much prepared to put a significant amount of money into that, and I hope that other legislators would be as well. So that's the first thing, and my. My second thing is now, oh gosh, I was just so passionate in the moment that I completely forgot what the second thing was. Oh, I see there's a gentleman that has a sign that says, Shinagawa, we want a living wage. And I'm totally there with you. I mean, you might want to just change it to like Shinagawa and take out the we and change the want to a wants, because Shinagawa wants a living wage. Thank you so much.
Had Frank next, but he's deferring to Kathy, who was after him. So Kathy, would you go first and then Frank? Then I have Dooley, Pam, and Jim.
Thanks, Mike.
Will.
Thanks, everybody, for coming out. That's what we need. When people put pressure on government, that's when we have to respond. The fact is, I've seen in my life government setting wages and setting prices a lot. Current examples are we purchase wind energy, and part of the reason given for that is that we want to drive the market. Right now, it's not it's more of a tenable market than we would like it to be, and so the county's been purchasing wind energy in order to bolster the market to make it more viable, so that more people will invest in it. We're willing to invest in our people, and I think that's what investing in a living wage is. The same way that we give abatements, as one of the people pointed out, in to sow the ground for more economic development. We can do the same thing with our people. So we talked about this for hours on the Living Wage Working Group, and Joe's laughing because we've heard a lot of these arguments. The trick is we've got to be willing to stand behind them. We've got to be willing to say, okay, the policy we had wasn't great, and I was on that previous committee, and I will tell you, and so was Mike. We did the best we could at the time, and so was Pat, as a matter of fact. We did the best we could at the time. That was 10 years ago. We've had the economic downturn. A lot of things have happened. We can do better. And I believe there's probably nobody sitting around this table or at a lot of the other tables that wouldn't like to see their neighbors doing better. The question is, in my opinion, a philosophical one, because some folks feel that you're taking from someone to give to someone else. I would say that's not what it is. It's a collectivist idea, and yeah, I can sit here and say that. I don't mind it a bit. The fact is, when you join together, you're stronger. And a lot of times we share things, you know, so that everybody doesn't have to buy one. Those are good things. This is the same deal. What we say is we're going to invest in people. We're going to pay subcontractors more in the hope that more people can afford to live here. That means they won't have to drive their gas-guzzling, inefficient cars, or even, if they can, catch a bus in and out, because the bus might not go at the same times as their work schedule. Even if they carpooled together, the driving, you know, sometimes I know people that commute 2 hours to get to their jobs in Ithaca. Okay, that's ridiculous. We should find a way to make it to where people that work here can live here. And one way to do that is to see to it that the county pays contractors and subcontractors a living wage. That's a start. Like Nathan said, you know, the idea is we're behind this. We're going to figure out how to do it. He said not if but when. I say now.
Thank you, Kathy. Frank Proto, let's keep it crisp, folks, so we could get through our whole agenda tonight within a reasonable time.
We're all betting that you'll get us out of here by 11, Mike. Not to break the momentum, but I have a couple of other things I wanted to mention, too. Since the living wage item came up, and thanks to all the folks that came to speak about it, there was a comment, and I'm not sure if it was the professor that was speaking about it, but the comment that was made regarding how obscene, well, I'm going to use the word obscene. Some of the salaries are of our corporate partners, if you will. Just to assure you, some of us that are in that world have worked pretty hard to get those salaries reduced, because some of them are seven figures or more, and more, and it is really unfair. I'm waiting to see the report that's going to come out of the living wage group that Kathy just referred to, but I think the discussion we have regarding that is going to be pretty exciting. I hope all of you will come for that discussion, too. I don't know when that's going to hit, but I understand it has to go through a couple of more committees before it gets to us. The if you'd let me digress from the living wage for just a minute.
Only a small digression, Frank.
Small digression. First, I was made aware, because of some of the comments that I've made about access to through Time Warner to these very meetings, and some of our constituents can't see these meetings or hear them because of Time Warner dropping the access stations. You can only get them if you have a digital TV or you subscribe to their higher tier. I became aware, or was reminded today by Michelle, that, and I know this may not be accessible to everyone, but these meetings are accessible through our website. And you can watch the live ones. You can watch us doing exactly what we're doing or go back and see a previous meeting. So I'm going to ask if there's some way that maybe Greg Potter can get the word out as to what that access was that you told me about today, Michelle, because there's a lot of people who can perhaps do it through their computer as opposed to Time Warner, which leads me into my second concern.
Frank, I believe it's on our website.
Good. But you should be able to access it then with that legislative access. Mike, a couple of meetings back, and I think you're our cable commission guy. Did any discussion take place regarding the Time Warner issue that I just mentioned? Because you said you might have a chance to bring it up.
We haven't had a meeting since then that I've attended, so that I do intend to bring that up. The issue of changing the location of the public access stations from the lower tier, which the basic tier, analog tier, to the digital, and many people not being able to receive it on cable-ready TVs. That was discussed a little bit in the Capital Plan Review Committee because we think that having gone to digital, the quality of the broadcast going out not only from here but from some of the other locations, the city and Cooperative Extension, for example, is not as good.
There was quite a discussion at the Danby Town Board meeting last night, and just to remind you, Rick Dietrich is coming loaded for bear.
Good.
The other two quickies, remind your people that the star letters for the basic star are out. They should be receiving them if they haven't already. Make sure they apply. Remember, extended star are not receiving a letter. And the other item, this Friday, the 20th, in Lansing at Myers Point, is the Watch Fire. And it's sponsored by the Vietnam Veterans of Chapter 377. I'd love to see you there. Pat, I'm sorry if I stole your thunder.
That's okay. Could you, while you're doing it, just mention the time?
7 o'clock. Official ceremony is 7 o'clock, but people can start arriving 5:30, because there's always a little camaraderie that goes on. Thanks, Pat.
Let's move to Dooley Kiefer.
I have three items I'd like to fit into my 3 minutes. Responding to the visitors who've spoken to us, at the federal level, our definition of poverty is ludicrous, and most of our problems stem from that so out-of-date definition. I think locally the legislature is serious about addressing livable wage. I agree that it's doable. I was delighted to see the county administrator's budget message, which was embargoed until 5:30 tonight, so I've just been looking at it. Says that he's brought in a recommended budget at 3.5% tax increase. We had asked him to bring one in at 4%. If he's done his usual careful job keeping everything still functioning, That means we have some money that we can put toward livable wage this year, and I hope that that's what happens. I had one other thing that I wanted to mention. There was a good proclamation about Latina Month. I liked everything about it except that it mentions Columbus Day, which is not something I celebrate. I don't think we should be including that in proclamations. And the third thing I want to say is something I'm responsible for saying because I am on the Environmental Management Council. And next week, on Wednesday night, at the County Library, from 5 to 6:30 p.m., there's going to be a participatory discussion on a proposed plastic bag ban, which is nowhere near in its final form. The program will begin with a brief overview of why the EMC has made this recommendation, but then all the participants there will be encouraged to share their concerns. The sponsors of this meeting are the Environmental Management Council, the Downtown Ithaca Alliance, and the Chamber of Commerce. And they all have different perspectives, but they all see value in following this recommendation to wherever it goes. So I'm urging listeners as well as people here tonight to try to attend that meeting. Any additional priority concerns that are identified will be initially addressed that very same night by having the groups break into small groups and brainstorm how to deal with the problems that are identified. And then they'll get back together and report out what progress they've made. So I hope you can attend.
Can you repeat the time and date?
It's a week from tomorrow, Wednesday night, September 25th, from 5 to 6:30 p.m., the Borg Warner Room in our county library.
Can a notice be sent out by email of that, please?
It's gone to the legislators.
Okay. We have Pam McAsey next, and then on the list I've got Jim Dennis, Will Burbank, and Peter Stein.
Thanks, Mike. Yes. I wanted to apologize to the people who came tonight because I had said that I would be available to speak out in front, but I was driving back from Maine today, and I didn't get back, and I just walked in the door just before you did. I actually thought you were all would be in here. And I will say that this is a very important issue, not just for Tompkins County, but for our society, because what we have seen since the 1980s is a massive redistribution of wealth in this country. And to have us at this point trying to increase the low wages is just outrageous because of the massive wealth that has been accumulated by small numbers of people. And part of the way that this happened was by privatization, and privatization created a ghetto of people who were hired to do public work, but they were paid generally less and were with little, few or no benefits. And I think that I don't think Tompkins County intended to be part of that, but I think that in combination with the fact that historically low-wage jobs, which are jobs mostly held by women and minorities, have continued to be in that bracket. And so in the privatization of work, we continue to think that it's okay that the many women and minorities who are doing these jobs, that it is somehow an okay thing that they be paid less. I think that is very far from the truth, and I hope that the legislature this year will look closely at this issue and will begin to move forward to try and change that dynamic with the people who we hire to hire other people to do the work. And I think that I thank you for coming. I thank you for putting this on the front burner. I think it's something that we need to be doing on a national basis, and so I appreciate your efforts. Thanks.
Jim Dennis.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. And I just want to address myself to many of the people around the room who are new to the community, and I have great admiration for you. Come off the hill or on either hill and come down here and talk to us. Let me just remind you of a couple of things. One, Tompkins County has been a living wage employer for many years, the county employees. A large majority of the people we contract with are paid a living wage. We have undertaken a study pointed out to us that we needed to do something by a few employees of our solid waste operation, which is, again, a county-run operation. We have studied it. It will be going to a government operations committee. It will be coming to the budget committee. It will be part of this year's budget process. But I just want to say from my point of view, the county cannot cure the ills of the world. We will deal with the ones that we have control over. And we think we can do that. We can do that over time. But frankly, as a member of the budget committee in this legislature, we can't do it all at once. And if people look at us and say, you haven't done enough, you're going to be disappointed, I think. But we will attempt to do something about it. And I can't say a number out loud because I don't know what the rest of these people might do with the budget as we move forward. But we can do something. We will do something. And what I would ask you to do is to keep listening and comment on what we do over the next couple of months.
Thank you. Wilbur Bank.
Thank you, Mike. I would second Jim's call to stay engaged. Please don't give up on us. Keep talking. I want to switch gears and talk about a few things, two things that happened and or three things that, and two things that are coming up. Last weekend was one of my favorite events of the year, which was Porch Fest in the Fall Creek neighborhood. This was more than 100 musicians setting up little performance areas on houses up and down the neighborhood. There were hundreds and hundreds of people walking and biking and just hearing this amazing array of music, which is everything from punk to Appalachian to Brazilian to Swedish and Zimbabwean. Just it truly reflected the cultural diversity that is in our community, the amazing diversity and just the creativity. Wonderful festival. If you didn't get it this year, put it on your calendar for next. However, if you, in a kind of similar vein of getting out into the streets and connecting with the community, there are two events coming up next weekend that you can still attend. And one is the Food Justice Summit, which is happening at Southside. And it is starting at, I apologize, I should know this. It's on Saturday, thank you. And Saturday the 21st, and there will be the keynote speaker is a woman named Majora Carter, who is an Iron Chef and an advocate of healthy, affordable food, educational tabling, and fabulous local music will be there as well. And then on Sunday is another Streets Alive event. As you may recall, there was one about 6 months ago. It was in Fall Creek. This one is going to be on South Side, and it's a chance to get out, dust off your bike or skates or walking shoes, just walk around, discover the community, talk with people, and sort of see what it really is like to be out and connecting with your community. I also want to tell you about one other thing that I did last week, which was in a very different vein. There is a new forest preserve that was dedicated on Saturday. It's called the Bach Harvey Forest Preserve, and it's in Dave's district, high above Upper Treeman Park and on Rockwell Place. And I learned about it because I got an email from Dave Bach, who, as some of you know, was a wonderful math teacher, retired. Both my kids were fortunate to have in school. And Dave said, you know, we have had this family homestead essentially for generations, and we have decided to essentially give it to the people of the future. Come out and join us. And about 50 people appeared on this very rural road, walked up a very long field to the top of it, and heard a dedication ceremony and telling how this land was being given to the community by Bob Bach and his three children, Dave, Nancy, and Dan. And this land has literally been in the Bach family, or the Bach-Harvey family, for six generations. At that ceremony, there were the next two generations. So literally there were, it was generations 8 and 9. So this land literally dates back to the Revolutionary War tracks. And it was mostly farmed for most of this time. But embedded in this land was a stand of maples that are old growth. And I know you probably all are aware of what old growth is, but most of the trees we see in our community are not old growth. This community was heavily farmed, heavily deforested. Most of the trees here are second or third generation. This, however, is original trees that were here at the time of the revolution. There's some of the most impressive maples essentially in upstate New York. And they hadn't been logged, they hadn't been taken down, and they are there to be seen. And by donating this land, these will continue indefinitely. And it's going to be owned by the Finger Lakes Trail Conference. It will be protected by the Finger Lakes Land Trust and managed through the trail system by the Cayuga Trails Club. As part of this dedication, we had a wonderful little tour, and I had not realized the obvious, which is one of the reasons that they take down old growth trees was this great lumber, and the tendency was to take down the best trees. Just makes sense. Unfortunately, that tended to leave the trees that were deformed or stunted or diseased and essentially not good stock for the future. Here's a case where we have left the best trees. And they will be continued to leave. And I also learned something I had not known. We saw evidence of what deers do to a forest. I had assumed that we had long had a problem with deer. I was surprised to learn that actually deers had mostly been disappeared from our environment, and that the first hunting in our area was actually in the 1940s. Maybe Frank remembers this. I don't know. But, if you go back into the 30s or whatever, there weren't enough deer to actually have a hunting thing. So
we still have a couple of other folks who'd like to talk.
Thank you, Mike. I apologize for rambling on. But this preserve is part of the is right adjacent to the Finger Lakes Trail. Go out and check it out. And thanks to the Bach family for making it possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Sounds really nice. I've got Leslin next, and then Pat, and then Nathan wants to make a short comment.
How come I didn't?
Oh, I'm sorry, Peter. I skipped you. Peter, you're next.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike. Well, let's see. I came here with something to say, but I was inspired by two other subjects to say something different, so I'll keep the last one till next time we meet.
As long as it's crisp.
Does it have to be crisp the next time we meet or not? So first about the living wage, just something that has occurred to me that I never hear, and it really surprises me. I believe that the idea of getting employers to sign on to living wage is a losing battle. It's impossible. And if you go back and look at the minimum wage and where that came from, that's something that happened in the New Deal. It was, I believe, 50 cents an hour when it started. And believe it or not, 50 cents an hour was a living wage. And any person who worked and had a job could, with difficulty, make do for himself and his family. And I say himself because women mostly didn't have jobs during that time. How in the world we have allowed ourselves as a nation, if in fact in 1933 or 34 it was possible for this nation to decide that everyone who works ought to get a living wage, And in fact, the problem was people who didn't have jobs. But those who had a job, it was enough. Why we have allowed ourselves to go from that and have $8 an hour be the living wage is, to me, an enormous mystery. It makes no sense, and nobody talks about it. And I don't understand why. So the other thing I wanted to do that I was inspired to talk about was in response to what Will was saying. Dave Bach. Dave Bach is somebody who I have a great deal of respect for, the teacher that made the that gave that donation. And just a little personal story. Dave Bach was a math teacher at Ithaca High School a long time ago. When my daughter was there, she took math from him. And he made a huge difference in her life. I think probably not completely, but partially because of Dave Bach, she decided that what she wanted to do in life was be a mathematician. And she went on and got a PhD from Cornell in mathematics and teaches math at a college now. That was a time when girls that wanted to get a PhD in mathematics were few and far between. But I'm sure that I'm not positive, but I think it's likely that she, had she not had Dave Bach for a math teacher, her life would have been different.
Peter, before I go to Leslin, Pat, did you want to be on the list to speak?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll put you on the list. Leslin, McBean, Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really do appreciate the sentiments I heard around this table with regard to the living wage issue. Kathy, 10 years ago, I sat on that very committee, and one of the things I admire about being on this body, in all its iterations with, you know, various members who have come and gone, is the fact that we've always taken on our leadership roles seriously, and we've always led when others would not. Regardless of whether we all agreed on an issue or not, we always took on a leadership role. I go all the way back to when I first came to this community, and it was Local Law C, when our nation was not allowing benefits for same-sex partners or even trying to recognize those partners. This county stood up and said, we will have a local law that would allow for that to happen. So we always take on leadership, and I know that we will. I know that we will do the same with the living wage issue. We've already begun by even embarking on a subcommittee to take a look at the issue. We were leaders when the living wage issue first surfaced here in Tompkins County to be one, a large body that said we will take this on and pay all our employees a living wage, and we did. Even down to those who were here for a short period of time as project assistants, I'd say, i.e., in some respects, interns, we pay a living wage to them. And so we will continue to work in that. It may not be everything happening all at once. The county administrator and I have a lot of conversation. I've had conversations with Pete and others that it may be something that we phase in, but we will take on that leadership role as we have done with every many other controversial issues and social justice issues that the rest of the country seem to shy away from. So thank you all for the sentiments around the table. I look forward to the discussion in budget and to see what we will do as well. I also want to add to the events happening in the county this weekend, not next, but this weekend, the 22nd also, aside from it being Streets Alive, is a culture fest celebrating hip-hop culture, which will occur at the Wood Street Park, 13 and Wood Street, right across from Tops, with lots of local artists and everything that represents a culture born out of the Bronx, from skateboarding to graffiti art to music of all kinds within that genre. So I invite everyone from noon to 6 to join us. I will be at Streets Alive World, not on my skateboard, probably with my skateboard in hand. Not trying to break body parts just yet. But I will be there and invite everyone to please come out and enjoy the festivities this weekend. Chris, huh?
Thank you. Almost. Pat Pryor next, and then Nathan, let's move on.
Yes, thank you, Mike. One thing about going toward the end is you get to correct things that people said. Thanks for the accolade, Kathy, but I was not here during the work of the first committee. That was prior to my time, but
you
I appreciate
the
thought.
Were on the city committee, the Common Council?
I was on Common Council.
You and David
But you
Whitmore.
Were part of the committee.
Yes. No.
You and David Whitmore, me and Mike Lane, and then you were on the other committee. But we were all here one way or another.
Oh, okay. Not through the legislature. However, when Peter made the comment about a long time ago at Ithaca High School, when Dave Bach was teaching there, I was teaching at Ithaca High School at that time. So I wanted to point out that in regards to the living wage, and I'm not going to repeat everything that's been said, but I, too, thank all of you who have turned up for this meeting tonight. I think this is an important topic to engage our community in discussion and to think very seriously about. I would really like to see everyone who works be able to earn a living wage. There's no doubt about that. I think I chair the Government Operations Committee, and we have had a presentation on the living wage. We're going to be talking about it again at our meeting this month. And one of the things that I will say is that as you hear the discussion, you may hear, as we did, the word balance used. And I think it's an important thing to think about because when we say the legislature should do this or the legislature should do that, when it comes to spending money, it's not our money, it's taxpayer money that's getting spent. And I think it's important to remember that when we talk about raising the living wage and requiring contractors to do to give a living wage. Because the reality is, if a contractor is required to pay a living wage, that money doesn't come out of their profits. They simply raise the cost of the contract. So in order to require them to pay a living wage, the cost of the contract to the county is going to be higher, which means that ultimately it's county taxpayers who are going to be paying for that. And so when we start talking about balance when it comes to implementing the changes that we would like to see in the living wage, I think that that's what we're talking about. For every person out there who works, who doesn't earn a living wage, I can talk to you about constituents that I have in the town of Lansing who are property owners and who are paying the taxes and who are struggling to keep their homes. We have one of the biggest farming communities in the county, and the farmers earlier this year were hit with a huge increase in their assessment. And so their property taxes already are increasing substantially this next year. We have a situation where we happen to be the site of the power plant that is very likely to close. And when that closes, it's going to be a huge hit for town of Lansing taxpayers, either through their property taxes or especially through their school taxes. So you may hear discussion about the need to phase this in, the need to find some way to balance what we do. And I just ask you to keep the larger framework in mind when we talk about that, because I don't really think there are many people around this table who do not support the basic premise that you come here with tonight. It's a question of figuring out how to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. And Nathan, you're waving? All right, thanks. Let's move on. There are no special topical presentations tonight. I don't have a chair's report from Martha Robertson, but I would just say in just a couple of words that in a few minutes we'll hear from our county administrator who will talk to us about our budget. And I think we have one of the best budget processes in any county in New York State. It's open. We agonize over every bit of it. We have many meetings. We bring the public in to talk to us. And it's something that I think we've been proud of over the years, and every year it gets better than what we do. We learn from the previous year, and we keep it so that people know what we're doing. And I think that's important, and as we go along, let's make it even better this year than we always do. Before I go to Joe, why don't we take the county attorney and finance director reports first, and then we'll come back and let Joe do his presentation. Go ahead, Jonathan Wood.
I don't have a report. I'm very anxious to see Joe's.
See, I figured that. Rick Snyder, our county finance director.
You notice everybody left when you called on the county attorney.
That's why I did.
No, should have gone with that early.
Good evening. I just want to report tonight that the final and audited financial report for the period ending December 31st, 2012 has been received, and I have supplied the legislative clerk with a copy of said report. I've emailed an electronic copy of the financial report to each of the legislators, and the audit committee and the budget, capital, and personnel committee have each received the report, and they have heard the auditor's formal presentation. As you read through all the materials that I've sent to you, I thought I would just add this. To keep your reading to a minimum, I would like to point out that there is an executive summary and there's a management discussion and analysis in the financial report. Those are both effective summaries, which highlights the year's important data and issues. As with other years, the financial report and our budgets are being made available on the county's new website. So you have that information available now. If anyone has any questions about anything in the report, feel free to call my office. And that's all I have for this evening.
Any questions for Rick? Thank you, Rick. County Administrator Joe Marana.
Thank you, Mike. I'm going to spend my entire report tonight to kick off the 2014 budget process. I'll do it through a PowerPoint because I know you hunger for these PowerPoints, so I didn't want to disappoint.
Let's let him make his presentation and then go to questions afterwards.
Thank you. That'd be great. And also, the hard copy is in your red book, so if you wanted to take notes or anything along the way, you can do it that way. I think it's metaphorical that the 2014 tentative budget has been literally hanging over your heads during the entire meeting so far. We always begin this process by talking about the things in our environment that are affecting the budget, that are really shaping the numbers that appear in all those line items, beginning with kind of the underlying economy. We start usually with looking at the unemployment rate. And as you look at the unemployment rate in our community, this is the Tompkins County unemployment rate.
I'm sorry. Joe, can I just interrupt for a second? Is it possible to dim the overhead lights shining on us so that we can see, what during this so we can see the screen?
I'm getting a nod from the control room.
Thank you.
There we go. That's great. So as we look at unemployment, it is declining, but it's still much elevated over where it was before the recession. So in terms of an indicator of the underlying economy, it's getting better, but it's still much higher than unemployment than we've been accustomed to in this community for a long time. Inflation continues to be quite low. You can see the chart here that shows what it's been like since 2006, including a period of deflation when the economy went really bad. But now we are tracking below 2% on inflation. Consumer confidence, which we look at because if people are feeling good about the economy, they tend to spend money. And if they're not feeling so good, they're holding back. And that means sales tax collections for us. So you can get a sense here. The top line is New York State. The top line is the U.S. The bottom line on this chart is upstate New York. So you can see that it's kind of on the upswing, although over the last few months it's been declining a bit, and we do lag behind the rest of the nation in terms of our confidence about the future of the economy. As we get more into things that get directly into our budget, in terms of looking at levels of need in this community, we still find high levels of need that are affecting our services. We always look at food stamps. We've said a million times it's a great barometer of the strength of the underlying economy and dependence on public services. And you've seen this line before, and you know that it is up significantly, particularly since the recession, and it's continuing to rise. Even though we talk about a recovery, the number of individuals who are receiving food stamps in this county, and that's the chart, continues to rise. Safety net cases, these are the temporary assistance cases that we pay for. We don't pay for what's called family assistance anymore, but we do pay for safety net, which is the program that people rely on when they've been reliant on public services for some time. Family assistance, you recall, after 5 years, the federal government says, you're off. We don't fund you anymore. Individuals then come over to the safety net program. We pay 71% of the cost of safety net. And you can see that over time there's been a kind of a gradual increase, but over the last year or so, it sure looks like there's been a migration of people from family assistance to safety net, which means they're having a hard time getting off welfare. There remain critical social problems that as a human service provider in this area we have to provide for. Children in placement, that number has gone up very substantially over the past few years. Has come down a little bit recently, but still very elevated. And then if there's a bright spot indicating that there's some growth in the economy, we look at the stock market, where there's been progressive growth ever since the economy bottomed out in 2009. It's important to us in a way because, again, like consumer confidence, if people's nest eggs have been restored, they're more likely to spend money, particularly on durable goods that generate a lot of sales tax. So those were kind of the underlying conditions. In setting up this budget, this was really these were the areas that we talked about during a retreat back in April. What would we try to accomplish in this budget? And we set several goals. We wanted to maintain current levels of service. We're in a maintenance mode. We're not in an expansion mode. We're in a maintenance mode. We wanted to stabilize our services. We got there last year. We came away from the awful times of the recession, and we tried to stabilize what we all call the new normal, a smaller government, smaller workforce, but still able to maintain current levels of service. That was a goal of the 2014 budget. We said we were going to consciously reinvest in infrastructure, facilities and infrastructure. And by policy recently passed, we said we would raise our property tax levy by 0.75% to support that reinvestment in capital. We said we wanted to address the critical needs of some of our sponsor and partner agencies. And we'll talk about those as this presentation goes on. We didn't want to do that at the expense of our fiscal health. We worked hard to get a strong fiscal condition. We didn't want to compromise that in the budget. We also wanted to address some critical internal staffing needs. So the outcome of the process, just to get to the end before we talk about the middle, the outcome is we achieved those goals, and we achieved them below the 4% levy target that we began the process with back in April. In terms of the direct influences on this budget, what has affected this budget most significantly? Understanding that this budget consists of thousands of moving pieces. But what were the major influences on this budget? Well, there's been modest wage growth. I think when we talk about it, we have to always say that this is a five-year wage plan that had a couple of zeros, a one-time bonus, and then 2 years that had a 2% increase. We're in the last year of that contract, so our settled contracts will be going up by 2% next year. That affects the budget. It drives the payroll by about $1.1 million. That number includes the impact of an arbitration for road patrol that was settled late last year, but goes way, way back. We're still unsettled on road patrol for the years past 2009, but there is a catch-up in this budget for the arbitration award that was done last year. Our FTEs, our full-time equivalents, are up slightly, and I'll talk about those in a little more detail as we go along. They're up by 4.2 positions. 1.5 of those are temporary. They will come and go over the course of 2014. There is one position that we talked about during the course of this year. It's in mental health. We used to outsource this function. We insourced this function over the course of 2013. We acknowledge that that was good for the county and that it was cost neutral. So the bottom line is there are new net positions in this budget, but only 1.7 net new that will affect 2014. And for perspective, our roster is still down 7.5% from where it was in 2009. So we were still well below where we were in 2009. And there's a graph here to show you what that trend has been. Had we kept our roster at that 780 mark, our budget would have been in excess of $5 million higher today than it is. So that's a meaningful reduction that we've been able to sustain. Our fringe benefits, and I can't recall the last time we talked about this being a positive in the budget, our fringe benefits are stable in 2014. You read the stories about the pension rate, the announcement that was made a couple of weeks ago by the comptroller, the pension rate declined a bit from 2013 to 2014. Now, the rate declined, but the payroll base will be going up next year. Remember that 2%? So the bottom line is pension costs are essentially flat for next year. It's been a long time. It's been since 2009 since we've been able to say anything like that. And I will tell you that they're still up three times over what they were a few years ago, but they're, again, beginning to stabilize. Our health premiums went up by 8%, but we've spent a lot of time on the way we project our health benefits. It has been a good but relatively imprecise in the past. We think we've got a better projection model. We have sharpened the pencils. So some of that increase, in fact, much of that increase, will be offset by a better projection, we think, of what actual costs are. So that's been a way to stabilize our health expenses as well. Our total fringe package, and it's more than just pensions and health, but our total fringe package in this budget is up by about $500,000. And there's the chart that shows that the history of pensions. You can see where we were in 2009, that we have apparently peaked in 2013. That red bar is what we expect to pay as rate. That's the rate applied to payroll in 2014. And then the last few lines, those are the pension rates that the state budget office has projected in the future. So you can see we're expecting a few more years of decline, and it will stabilize something around 15%. Still very high, but stable. The other thing that I thought I would never utter in a budget conversation that relates to county budgets are the two words together, Medicaid decline. Medicaid costs in 2014 will decline, as will several of our mandates. So these are the large mandated programs in our budget. You can see that some are going up. One is child care. That's child welfare going up. Safety nets going up. Delinquent care is going up. But balancing that out, and in fact more than offsetting those increases, are areas in our mandates that we are projecting to decrease in 2014. And when DSS comes, you'll want to talk to them about those projections. Those are all the declines within DSS. The important one is Medicaid relief, big part of our mandates. What's happened there, and we talked about this briefly, is the state is anticipating savings from the Affordable Care Act that will happen in the Medicaid program. Basically, the federal government is saying we're going to increase the rate of reimbursement for certain Medicaid programs that the state provides that many other states never did. The state is, again, expecting that windfall, and because we help the state pay for that cost, a part of that benefit will be assigned to counties. That will reduce what we call the recurring local cost of Medicaid by $351,000. It's a pretty significant decrease. If you look at the total Medicaid, when you go to your budget, when you look at the total Medicaid expense, it's down by more than that, by $586,000 since 2013. But if your memory is good, you recall that in the 2013 budget, we had this odd 53rd week that we had to pay. It's usually 52 weeks. We had a 53rd week. We used one-time money to pay for that. We didn't want to raise taxes to do it. So when you take that one-time effect away, the recurring savings to the county is $351,000. Again, you can see that even though it's down, it's still elevated way above where it was a little over a decade ago. The last time it decreased, it was because the federal government put one-time stimulus money into Medicaid to help states, and in our case, counties, to get through the recession. A problem mandate continues to be child care. Call it child welfare if you'd like. The caseloads are still high. We're projecting spending up by 17% over the year before, which is going to mean $300,000 in additional local dollars, property tax and sales tax dollars, to pay for that one mandate. Another influence in this budget, we talked about it before, is capital reinvestment. We said we would increase the levy by 0.75% to pay for capital improvements. That's our policy. Our budget does that. We've lifted the capital budget up by $317,000. Most of that, nearly all of that, is for the debt service on projects that we've already authorized, built into the capital plan and already authorized. So we are aligned with our policy. Sales tax is very anemic right now. We've talked about this, too. The growth is very slow. We're up mid-year by 1.15%. So we brought our estimate of 2013 down to that level, and we're building it by 1.5% for 2014. So we are projecting relatively slow growth in sales tax this year and next. So we're only getting about $191,000 of new revenue from the sales tax. We had originally thought we would be more in the 2% range both years. We don't want to overshoot the mark in sales tax. That'll get us in trouble. So we are being relatively conservative, but tracking actual expenditure or actual receipts right now. In pilot revenues, down a little bit. Some of this is for good reasons, that payments in lieu of tax have a term. So some properties have gone through their term, and they're returning to the tax rolls after paying pilots. But the largest influence there is the what we used to call AES, I think it's now CPP, the plant. The negotiated reduction in pilot for 2014 is $83,000. So that revenue source is declining as well. Another influence was the sponsor and partner agencies. We spent a lot of time, and the legislature spent a lot of focus on the needs that have been demonstrated by TC3, by the public library, by TCAD, by TCAT, more recently, and we'll talk about this, by TC Action that was affected by sequestration. So there was a significant influence on the budget. So when all that is stirred into the soup and we look at the outcomes of this process, how did we adjust to all of these things? Well, our goal was to maintain services, and we did. There's no reduction in services that we provide to the community in this budget. Our goal was to invest in capital. We fully implemented the new capital plan. We added a 3/4 point increase to the property tax levy to support that. Our goal was to stabilize sponsored agencies, and there are meaningful contributions to that stabilization in this budget. It's old news that we increased the TC3 allocation by 3%. That was done some time ago. That was $81,000 in this budget. The increase for the public library to address a $400,000 structural deficit is a $315,000 increase from the county. And as the workforce recommended, a part of that is supported with target dollars. $175,000 has been recommended in target dollars, and the rest with county reserves, a draw from our fund balance. You recall, and this was late last year, we developed a new revenue model for TCAD. That's a combination of room tax, draws on room tax, and also target funds. So we have put them on sounder ground through this budget in implementing the recommendations of the work group that were accepted by the legislature early this year. It's very fresh news, a new revenue model for TCAT. The mortgage tax will provide, we believe, $680,000 in direct funding for TCAT. The county, under this budget, is retaining 120 of total collections from the mortgage tax, and we will apply that toward our contribution to TCAT. We're also providing small amounts of additional support for soil and water. We're replacing some one-time money in the soil and water budget provided last year with ongoing money. I'm relieved it's only $15,000. We're also in TC Action. Again, sequestration cost TC Action $50,000. This budget recommends only providing half of that gap in county funds. There's also an across-the-board cost of living adjustment for other sponsored agencies. Our goal was fiscal stability. We've achieved that goal in this budget by not drawing as much on our reserves as we have historically done. The amount of reserves applied to this budget has dropped from $1.3 million in 2013 to $700,000 this year. There was a time not long ago that we were depending on $3.5 million every year coming out of the bank, and there was a concern that we would drain that dry. So we have come a long way in terms of our reliance on one-time revenue to support ongoing budgeted expenses. This budget also recommends a $100,000 increase in our contingency fund. Here, I think we are very close to the margin of error in our budgets. I told you that our health estimate, health benefits, we think we've sharpened the pencils. It is precise. I worry that we are so close to the mark that there is no latitude in this budget, no margin of error, so we've increased contingency by $100,000. In terms of critical staffing needs, this is where those net FTEs come into play. There is a position in the 911 center that would focus on quality assurance, training, and CAD administration. There is an MEO in highway that's funded within target. The department adjusted its spending to be able to support a new MEO. There's a clerical position at the airport. There's a half-time position in personnel. Again, those net down to less than two positions, but in terms of kind of new titles, this is where you will see them. Not funded in this budget, kind of the dividing line has been we want to maintain services. We're not in an expansion mode. So when OTRs were requested that we believed would expand services, we did not recommend funding those OTRs. In terms of risks in this budget, and we have to be candid, who knows what's going to happen in Washington? And that's been a wild card for the last several years. Awful things could happen there, and it could affect us. And so we can't budget for it. We just have to acknowledge that it's a risk. Again, I think there's little margin of error in these estimates, both expenses and revenues. And as we appreciate the savings in Medicaid that are expected from the Affordable Care Act, there's also a chance that the Affordable Care Act won't live up to expectations, that Congress will do something to delay its implementation, that projections of savings were not accurate by the state. So there's a risk factor that goes along with that as well. So finally, into the budgets, the fiscal target was 4% on levy. That would have allowed us to raise the levy by $1.75 million. The recommended budget that you have in front of you tonight is less than that. It's 3.54%. We've raised the levy by $1.55 million in making that recommendation. In terms of OTRs, about $1.9 million was requested. We were able to fund many of those, so we're at $1.37 million. So there's about $500,000, a little more than $500,000 in OTRs that were not funded, and that translates directly to levy. That was a corresponding reduction in levy requirements to be able to support that. The total budget is $170 million. That's all funds. So that's general fund, that's solid waste, it's the airport. It's all funds at $170 million. It's up by 2.9%. It's a little exaggerated because in that total budget number is the pass-through of that new mortgage tax money to TCAT, so it shows as an expense in the budget, so it's a bit elevated. But just dollar for dollar, it's up by 2.9% over 2013. The local budget is up by less. It's up by 1.6%. The tax levy is up by $1.55 million. That's 3.54%. The tax rate, because the tax base is growing, the growth in the rate is less than growth in the levy. It's up by only 1.9% over 2013. It's a 13-cent per thousand increase in the tax rate, which will cost the average homeowner who owns a $163,000 home $21 more in 2014 than that owner paid in 2014 than they paid in 2013. Again, a 1.9% increase. So in terms of the dollars and cents and the drivers in this budget, that's our budget. That's the recommendation that we will spend the next several weeks going through. I want to take a one-minute refresher and just go through the budget format, because you have a document that I think you'll find useful again this year. The first section of the large document, it's the overview of the community. It's a narrative about the community. Section two, you're going to want to look at carefully. I think it's an excellent summary of the budget. You will see there the entire budget aligned as if it's a line item budget. You'll see fund balance, you'll see mandates, you'll see benefits. It's an excellent summary of a number of key items in the budget in Section 2. Section 3 is the capital plan. Section 4 is the nitty-gritty of the budget. These are the departmental budgets. And in that departmental section, there is a consolidated department budget. So you know departments like COFA have a number of individual budgets. And until last year, you never got to see what the total COFA budget was, and there's a lot of them like that. Well, the first page in there is the consolidated departmental budget, the unit budgets, the OTRs, and then a summary of programs, all within that same section. Also, the roster of each department, all within that departmental section. The same format for agencies in Section 5, and then just closing it out, the chart of accounts at the back, the contracts and the memberships at the back of the budget. Probably spent enough time already, but I will tell you, everything that we've talked about tonight is accessible on our webpage. Very easy to use. So if you want to consult electronically the budget. You can do it, as can your constituents, if they want to see what's been recommended in the budget that we're presenting tonight. So that's our kickoff of 2014. And again, we'll finish sometime in late November, I think, when the process ends.
All right, let's go to questions. Let's remember we're not here to debate the budget. We want to take it home with us and take a look at it. And but if there are questions about the presentation, let's go to that. I have let's go right around. I've got Pam, then Peter, then Pat, and Brian, and Carol.
Well, I have a couple of questions. Can you give us a quick rundown of on the OTRs, what was funded and what wasn't? I mean, is it in one place? I mean, it looks like for each department, it's there.
There's a summary in section two. Yeah, I think though it's better if you go into section two. There's an OTR summary that begins on page three of that. Okay. There are, I think, 50, Pam, so it would be hard to characterize each one tonight. Kevin reminds me, too, in the front part of your budget, there's a spreadsheet, Dooley's holding it up, but also that has the OTRs on it?
It has a number of that.
It doesn't have them, it just says.
Yeah. I would look at the text, the summary, and the budget.
Okay. May I have one more question? This is a simple one. On page 18, it's the goal, address critical staffing needs.
Yeah.
You say, you used an acronym MEO for highway,
yeah.
I believe?
I'm sorry.
Or was that airport?
Nope, it's highway. It's motor equipment operator. Okay. So this would be someone who would drive trucks, snow plows, those kinds of things.
Thank you.
Peter?
I had a couple of questions. Let's see if I can remember them. They're all gone. Oh, no. First one, unemployment is leveling off and going down, and food stamps show absolutely no sign of leveling off, not to say going down. Do you understand that?
Well, I think unemployment is still very high for us.
Right,
and
it's
stabilizing high. Why additional people are getting food stamps now, I think it's better put to the DSS folks. I think there's a companion statistic. The number of people that seem to be leaving the one temporary assistance role, family assistance, which means they've expired their 5 years of benefits and they're coming onto safety net, tells me that there are prolonged problems. People that have been victimized by the recession are having a really hard time getting back into the workforce. And they're increasingly relying on public services for basic needs, including food stamps. I think you'll get a much better picture from Patricia Carey when she's here to talk about the budget.
Okay. My second question is, can you make an intelligent guess of what the tax cap is going to be this year?
We can do better. We've calculated it, and Kevin was recognized recently for being among the few in the state that got it right last year. It's we've got it at 2.26%.
Okay, thank you.
Pat Pryor.
I may have missed this someplace. What is the dollar value of a 1% increase in a tax level?
$438,000.
Ryan Robinson.
438, you said?
Yeah.
A couple of things, Joe, that might be important to the public as we go forward. But you characterize this budget as kind of a maintenance versus expansion.
Yeah.
I'm willing to guess that some of our department heads are going to try to articulate that it wasn't, that they're not looking for expansion. They're looking to recoup losses that have been that have occurred in the last 3-4 years. Is that right?
Well, maybe not. I think this organization has accepted the fact that we are in this new normal. So when you look at the OTRs, you're not going to find a large number of requests to go back to where we were before. It's more trying to figure out, are there Are there adjustments to be made to keep us stable, to make sure that the essential stuff continues to be provided? So you're not going to see anything that would suggest that we're pushing back toward 2009 where everything seemed to peak. So I'm pretty impressed by the way departments have handled this situation, where they really are saying we need the resources to just keep doing what we're doing now. They're not asking you to get bigger.
Okay, good. I think that's important to say. I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to go to my constituents and tell them that mandates are going down. They've just heard the other way for so long. Especially when it comes to, you said there's about a $600,000 savings in Medicaid.
No, when you net it down and you look at the recurring, I think it was, what did I say, $350,000 of ongoing Medicaid reductions. Yeah.
But my question on that is, I can remember not all that long ago, there was something, I think it had to do with reimbursements that the state had from the feds or the way they were doing something, where we, the royal we and the state, were going to get hit with a huge penalty and... Yeah. All that kind of stuff. Whatever happened to that? Because seem to have lost track of
it. Well, I think the state did what the federal government wanted it to do. So when you listen to Sue Romanchuk talk about how mental health will be different in the future and how it's going to a managed care model, mm-hmm. and various other changes in systems, those are the kinds of things the federal government wanted the state to do to be able to comply with its requirements. And so it's basically gotten past that point of threatened recoveries from the feds. So here, again, the state has made an estimate that they will achieve a certain amount of savings from the Affordable Care Act, and I think we have to be clear in identifying that as a risk. If they've misestimated, then we will have a problem in our Medicaid budget. But to ignore that, I mean, we talked about this. Should we include this in the budget or not? If we didn't, we would have had to raise taxes by $350,000, and we didn't think we needed to. We think it's a prudent risk, and if we've guessed wrong, we'll have to regroup, use reserves, adjust, but I guess that's how we would characterize it, as a prudent risk.
Okay. And lastly, by the way, Kevin, I love this thing. This is the best... document I think we have in this process. I mean no disrespect to any department heads or, you know, anything, but we have a couple of days here of presentations where there's no OTR requests basically for the whole evening. We've all been here for, this is our fourth budget cycle. I don't know. I mean, is it pared down a little bit, or can we contract this, or shouldn't we? Or
let's,
you know.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm getting at?
I do. And I think we have to watch to see how it goes this year. We've reduced the time we spend in terms of weeks by 2 weeks. We're starting 2 weeks later than we usually do.
Mm-hmm.
This is another area where we talk a lot about whether we should do these meetings or not, especially if there's no OTRs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of the purist in me. I think once a year, to make sure that a department understands its accountability to the legislature on the money side of things, is really important. And this really reminds everybody that there is a fiscal accountability to the legislature. It gives you a chance to ask questions. So I think even for that purpose, it makes sense to have those meetings. We've got them pared down. Most of them are 15 minutes to a half an hour. So time-wise, they're pretty, as Mike Lane would say, crisp.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that goes.
I just, you know, in terms of, I hesitate to say non-controversial. You know, that's kind of a silly thing to say, but just by looking at the sheet, it doesn't look anywhere near what I remember things looking like for certainly in the last 3 years.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, let me just tell you what my list is. Carol, Frank, Jim, Kathy, Leslin. Carol?
Yeah, thanks for the presentation, Joe. A couple of questions. Is there anything in here to deal with some of the events that we've had since April, since you started the process, things like the hydrilla expansion, the climate events, flooding, you know, stuff that's come up? Have you had a chance to build that in, or is that something we need to take into account?
I don't think so, Carol. I mean, we're focusing a lot on emergency management. In fact, there's an all-day drill coming up Thursday of this week. So we're trying to focus ourselves on things like that that relate to severe weather events and other emergencies. But in terms of adding money to the budget for hydrilla, no, we did not do that. And I can't think of any other extraordinary things that we put in here post-April. You will find that the contribution to the library in terms of target dollars is higher than what we had originally talked about. The goal there is to try to dig out of this as quickly as we can within the parameters that we have. So you'll see a focus on that one. But that's the only thing that I can think of that is a real departure from April.
I mean, might you be coming back to us saying we'd better make an adjustment for some of that? I mean, I know we took $500,000 to deal with the flood in April, which, you know, we had sitting in the budget, but we were hoping to save it for other things. So will we have to make adjustments for that as we go along?
None that I can think of right now.
Okay. And then my next question was sort of building on what Brian was going in terms of, you know, our departments did have to cut over the years, and at what point might they be coming to us? But it's also the human services agencies. It might be a good year to get a report back from the Human Services Coalition looking back. Where were we in 2009 with the agencies? I mean, there's some agencies who've dropped off the list over the years because of those cuts. And where are we now with them? So I'd be interested in getting a report on that when it's their turn. And then I would make my usual request, so it's not last minute, to Kevin for that lovely bar chart that you usually are able to provide, showing the relative size of our various departments and how the increment that rose or fell over the past year on those. And then my last question. So this question of the mandates going down, do you have a sense of whether those are going down because the costs have truly gone down or because the state and the feds are now no longer paying for things, so there are services that we're no longer mandated to provide, but that leaves people in our community hurting without those services? Are we going to hear in that direction?
Carol, aren't those kind of questions things that we should bring up with DSS when we're talking in budget?
Well, I'm not just talking DSS. I'm talking cross departments. I don't know where else it might come up.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to find, Carol, that there have been services that have been cut to individuals in those mandated programs. I think what's happening is that as some of the trends begin to decline slightly, there's a bit of a lag in recognizing those trends. You don't want to get too far out in front of a trend and budget that way. So the experience that we're having between 2012 and 2013 may have allowed DSS to say, we can reduce some of these estimated costs for these programs based on known caseloads now. So I think you will see some of that in the way DSS characterizes its budget and the reduction in the mandates. Medicaid came out of the blue. That was a late adjustment by the states to do that. But
thank you.
Frank.
Thanks, Mike. Joe, quick, can you first say what 1% equals again?
About $438,000.
Thank you. I want to pick up a little bit on what Carol said. Even on mandates, just a quick observation. I know $542,000 is a lot of money, but in a $170 million budget, it'll be interesting to see how that really does play out. Because it can change just as quickly as it changed this time around. And Medicaid is really a crapshoot Peter asked the question about the food stamps and why the unemployment is going one way, but the food stamp requests, the SNAP requests are going up. We haven't got a good handle on the employment piece yet, but remember that it's not based just on having a job. It's having a job that pays what? I mean, it's some of the replacement positions in this community. We haven't replaced all the mechanical engineers with more mechanical engineers. I mean, you know it better than I do, Peter, with Cornell. We've replaced them with a lot of service workers, and the salaries are considerably lower. So that's one reason from what we were talking about at the Human Services Committee. It's really a sad state of affairs. The question I thought Brian was going to ask is contingency fund. The backup, and maybe Carol, the backup for these disasters, the cause, you only increase the contingency slightly from just the abbreviated report. Is there something else? I know the other funds are being talked about, and Mike will probably bring up the recycling fee again because we talk about that every year.
One of my favorites.
I know. That's why I said that, Mike.
Well, the other source of dealing with an emergency is our fund balance, our reserves, which is why we felt it was important not to dip deep into those reserves. So we're above the 10% level. There's a statement of fund balance in the budget. So if something difficult happened, we do have the capacity to carry it with fund balance and still, if it's not catastrophic, stay above that 10% goal.
Well, I'm going where Carol was going. With all the catastrophes we've had, we may need a few more bucks in flood repair, whatever. So, okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Frank. It's about 20 after 7. If we can get through these questions... and then we could take our break and then come back and get into the regular agenda. I'd like to do that. Jim Dennis.
Michael, I will pass until my...
Thank you. Meeting. Kathy Luz Herrera.
I'll almost pass. A lot of my questions were answered already. First, my quick summary. $170 million budget, 721.5 FTEs. And how much did y'all say the 1% was?
438.
Okay. Those are good basics, and I love this thing because now I can go talk to my constituents because otherwise I'm just guessing. I was saying 725. You know, you don't really know. Page 16, I'm just trying to get in my mind right about the increases. It says here for TC3, $81,000. So is that an annual increase? Is that built into the budget now?
It is.
Okay, and that would be true for Tompkins County Public Library in terms of the $175,000?
That's the way to read it, exactly.
Okay, and the reserves, that's for this year, but presumably next year it could go into target or?
But the work group recommended that you basically ramp up. So you begin with a certain amount of target funding, the balance covered by reserves, and over time ramp up your target funding and reduce the reliance on reserves to help the library.
Is that what we're doing with contingent by increasing it by $100,000 this year? Are we expecting to increase it by, again, by $100,000 next year?
Not consciously. I think by policy, by good, fiscal practice, especially as your risks multiply. That's something to think about.
Okay. Just a couple more real quick. The next page 17, talking about the new revenue model for TCAD. Just to be clear, the $150,000 from room tax, and then the $68,000 will be target. So the following year, it'll be included in the budget.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Now, I bet you see where I'm going with this. We're talking about stabilizing the sponsored agencies. By additional target support, that means that Soil and Water would get the $15,000 built into their budget every year, and TCA, which was hit hard by the sequester, as you know, would get $25,000 built into their budget.
Yes.
Okay. I just before I go, was going to say that our goal is stabilizing the sponsored agencies, and I think that the budget does a real good job of trying to do that. And I know through this we're going to have some recommendations, and you know I will, in terms of TCA, but I think it's a good budget.
Okay. Thank you.
Leslie McBean Claiborne.
Thank you very much. Mr. County Administrator, might I ask if there's anywhere in this budget that there's some set aside to potentially deal with the living wage issue? We come to a decision on that?
There's not money specifically set aside for that, no.
Thank you.
Julie Kiefer.
Joe, will department heads be free to give presentations that they design themselves, or are they all going to have to use a standard format again?
They can use whatever format they want. They have to a department head ask if they could continue to use the template that we did last year.
I'm sorry to hear that, but okay.
I think there'll be a few that want to kind of add their own commentary slides, but the basic template will be the one from last year.
On page 22, there's a small footnote in the box that says over target requests. It says including planned adjustments to agencies. Yeah. What does that mean?
Yeah, I thought that was important to note. When we talked about the budget in April and we set our targets, among the goals that we were trying to achieve at that time was a certain across-the-board increase for agencies, and those show up as OTRs. So included in the OTR request are the cost of living increases for the agencies. So it's not a part of what was requested. We had kind of factored into the equation in April when we said we're prepared to go to a 4% levy.
And what is the COLA that you're factoring in?
1.5%.
Thank you.
Carol, for a short one.
Yeah, the list of contracts in one of the appendices, as I recall from past years, those list certain types of contracts but not others. And could you refresh my memory on which ones and where we can find the full list?
Yeah, the point that always comes up in these discussions is construction contracts are not in there. It's because they're basically ad hoc. They happen. So these are the ongoing contracts in the departments. I think that's the only kind of contract that is not in there.
And so if we wanted to find a full, a more complete list of all our contracts, is that anywhere?
You can look through the living wage report. You can see what we compiled for the living wage study.
Thanks.
Thank you. Frank?
Yeah, Mike, I just want to ask, you've asked us to be crisp. Jim Dennis, are you going to ask us to phrase everything as a question?
I would hope so.
Thank you.
Joe, we want to thank you for that presentation. And, you know, that's just the tip of the work that you and the department heads and staff have been doing for literally months here, working toward this. The folks at home may have heard Kevin referred to. That's Kevin Sutherland, who's here. And also we have another Kevin that's helping us now with the budget issues, and that's Kevin McCarthy. And
Kevin McGuire.
McGuire, excuse me. I know it's an Irish name. Sorry, Kevin. We want to thank your whole department for its efforts here.
Thank you for saying that. And this document is really the work product of Kevin Sutherland, who's done a really nice job.
And I like the photo of Ithaca Falls on the top. That's one of our landmarks. Let's take our break. Let's be back in our seats by 4:45, and let's see if we can get through the rest of the agenda.